Joining us now from Washington is Arjun Makhajani. Hello, sir.
Hi, Steve. This is a completely unprecedented accident. There have never been three reactors stricken at the same time at the same site that have lost cooling to the reactor where there's a threat of a meltdown. Actually, there has been at least a partial meltdown to all indications in at least two of these reactors and possibly three. And two of the reactors have also had explosions that have essentially destroyed the reactor building or the top of the reactor building and reduced much of it to a shell.
Arjun, one of those reactors was a special one. It had a mixture of plutonium in the core, am I right?
Yes. Japan has been trying to start plutonium fuel use for quite a long time and hadn't actually succeeded in doing so until very recently, last year, I think. And this fuel is a mixture of depleted uranium and plutonium that has been recovered from old fuel. Much of it is separated in France and England and sent to Japan. And plutonium is a more difficult fuel in these type of reactors. You have to have more control elements in the reactor, and I think in case of a meltdown will pose additional challenges in terms of preventing accidental criticality.
What's your biggest concern right now?
Well, my biggest concern right now is actually something that isn't being talked about. It is in the spent fuel pools. In this reactor, the used fuel, the spent fuel, that has a very large inventories of long-lived materials like strontium-90, which can cause leukemia, and cesium-137, which mimics potassium and goes all over the body, is right next to the reactor, near the top of the reactor, in a swimming pool-like concrete structure. Now, in the two reactors where there have been hydrogen explosions, the authorities have not talked about the spent fuel pool and whether it has been damaged or leaking or even possibly destroyed. I mean, these explosions were very severe explosions, and the spent fuel pool is in the area where the explosions took place. So I would not be surprised if these spent fuel pools are damaged. Now, the significance of that is that when the spent fuel pool loses cooling, it's just like a reactor losing cooling. But now that the building's top has been blown off, there is a very little restraint of the spread of radioactivity to the atmosphere. These uncovered spent fuel rods can not only generate hydrogen, they will generate a meltdown, and they can also catch fire. When zirconium reacts with steam, it not only creates hydrogen, it gives off a lot of heat. So it's like a self-sustaining chemical reaction, and at a certain point, these rods can catch fire. And of course, fire will spread radioactivity. So in that sense, it will be like Chernobyl, even though Chernobyl was a completely different type of reactor and had a very different accident mechanism where the reactor itself exploded. Here, the reactor has not exploded, but you had a hydrogen explosion that destroyed the building. And then the authorities have not at all been forthcoming about these spent fuel pools. And I think the risk of serious problem emerges at least as much from the spent fuel pools, and for the long term, more from the spent fuel pools than from the reactor.
There's a lot more uranium in the spent fuel pools than there is in the core of the reactor.
Yeah, we see, this is where we need information from the authorities. How much of the past 40 years of spent fuel in reactor one and the past 35 years of spent fuel accumulation is actually stored in the reactor? How closely were they spaced? That will determine the chances of a fire. How recently was spent fuel discharged into these pools, which will determine how grave the consequences could be. But in the West, they have often said that a Chernobyl-like accident is not possible here, and that is true and not true. In terms of the scale of the long-term damage and habitability, this kind of accident could be worse because the long-lived inventory, as opposed to the short-lived inventory, is much larger in the spent fuel pools. Uranium, plutonium, strontium-D, cesium-137. Brookhaven National Lab did a study of spent fuel pool accidents in 1997. and in the United States at closed power plants, and they estimated that the cancer fatalities within a 300-mile radius over the long term, over the decades, could range between 1,900 and 138,000. And the damage could be between 700 million and more than 500 billion with a B. And that's in 1997 dollars. So today, of course, today's dollars, the damage would be bigger. And in Japan, the specifics would be different because it depends on meteorology, it depends on population density, and so on, the amount of spent fuel that is actually in those pools. But the extreme consequences would be very severe, and I am dismayed that the authorities have provided no information to the Japanese public, and even no information about what they know and don't know about the condition of these pools.
So explain for me, please, Arjun Makajani, what exactly happens in these spent fuel pools? Does water have to be circulated among them to keep things cool? They need to be constantly cooled as well?
That's right. Because of the water, this is used fuel that has been discharged that is intensely radioactive, and the core of the nuclear waste problem associated with nuclear reactors, approximately 95% of all the radioactivity in either in weapons or in commercial fuel cycle is in spent fuel in the United States. It gives you an idea of how much of a problem it is. And the problem with this reactor design and these explosions is the spent fuel pools are in a very vulnerable place close to where the explosions have happened.
Now, we've heard that the fuel rods from one of these reactors have been, quote, fully exposed. A recent Wire report said that. What does that mean?
Well, the fuel, it's not like a coal-fired power plant or a gas-fired power plant. When you shut off the heat is done, and then it will cool down by itself in a short period of time. Here, the radioactivity that has accumulated from the past power production, the fission products, the splitting of the atom, those fragments are still there, and they're radioactive. When there's that much radioactivity, there's a lot of heat. And that heat needs to be carried away by water. It cannot be carried away by air because air just isn't dense enough and cannot carry away the heat. Water is 1,000 times more dense than air, and it can conduct away the heat. And therefore, cooling by water is necessary, and cooling by water requires water circulation. It requires pumps. It requires the pipes to be intact. And in the reactors itself, unless you have a way to carry away the heat, like to the turbine building and the condenser, you're going to have to vent the steam because in a meltdown type of situation, the water will turn into steam and the steam builds up the pressure. And if you don't relieve the pressure, it's essentially like a pressure cooker. So if you don't vent the pressure at a certain point in a pressure cooker will explode on you. And that's why they have to vent this radioactive steam, and they're going to have to continue to vent it for a long period of time, weeks and months, unless they find some other way of channeling away the steam and condensing it. This is a reactor environment now that is quite radioactive, and it's going to be very difficult to go and make repairs and bring the situation under control. The reactors certainly have to be written off, at least units 1 and 3. But even to stop the venting of radioactivity and to examine the spent fuel pools and to know the condition of the fuel is going to be a very, very hard job.
How much radioactivity is being released at this point? Do we know?
Well, it's very hard to tell. I can tell you from the measurements that have been reported in the press, there was at one point outside the reactor at the perimeter, 1,200 microsieverts per hour. That is more than 10,000 times the natural background level at sea level, would provide a radiation dose to the public equal to the annual limit in less than 1 hour. Now, level doesn't seem to have persisted, so you know, maybe the water is keeping the radioactivity down or they are venting it more carefully. But there have been very significant releases of radioactivity. several workers have had severe exposures, and some public also have had exposures, although extent is unclear. Look, you cannot have a hydrogen explosion in a reactor unless the fuel rod material has reacted to a very large extent with the water and created a lot of hydrogen. It takes a certain concentration of hydrogen to create the explosion, and for the explosion to destroy a concrete building, you have to have a lot of hydrogen. So the fuel is quite damaged, and they've been venting radioactivity, and there have been significant releases, and I don't think the authorities are really... The stay calm idea is a good idea, but it can only be realized if the authorities are more frank and forthcoming. This kind of play it close to the vest with the government and the nuclear industry in bed with each other and telling everybody to stay calm doesn't work in a situation like this.
I noticed that in the explosions in the reactor 1 and 3, there were different color smoke. And the reactor 3, which has this plutonium in it, it was very dark, and the explosion was seemingly much larger. The plume was much larger. Does that indicate anything?
You know, that's sort of beyond my level of knowledge, and I have not had a chance to watch video footage of the second explosion. I did watch the first one. There seemed to be a lot of dust particles and smoke in the first one, but it's hard to know if the smoke was from something in fire or whether it was a gray cloud from only dust particles. Very hard to tell because... And this is where the frankness of the authorities, they can't know everything. It's not possible to go and inspect these spent fuel pools. This is a very radioactive environment. The authorities, if I am to advise them, should change their press release. If you look at the Tokyo Electric Power Company press releases, they are utterly minimal and completely inadequate. They should say frankly what they know and what they don't know about both the problem, what kinds of equipment may have been damaged, and what is still intact that is usable, and what the prognosis for the short term and long term is. The more the public knows about what is known and not known, the better they can protect themselves, because the government is faced with such a multiple disaster that they have to rely on people to help themselves and help people as much as possible. But they have got an enormous, horrible tragedy from the earthquake and the tsunami. So if they don't empower people with information, it's really quite lamentable that they have not been more forthcoming about the state of these reactors, because they've been backtracking and backtracking, stay calm, it's all under control, the reactor's okay, and evacuate 2 kilometers, evacuate 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers, 20 kilometers. This is not a good way to proceed. But unfortunately, in line with the history of the government and nuclear industry being very cozy and trying to shut out the public as much as possible in Japan.
Now, I need to ask about the United States. What reactors do we have here that are similar to the setup there in Japan?
Well, I don't have a list in front of me, but there are, I think, 20-odd reactors of the same design. I don't believe that any of them are actually in areas of high seismic and tsunami risk. We have reactors that are in high seismic areas in California, which sit on, earthquake faults, San Onofre and Diablo Canyon. Fortunately, they have containment buildings from a later period that are thicker. You know, there was a small hydrogen explosion in during the Three Mile Island accident, to my memory. But because the containment building is much stronger, and I think the explosion was probably much smaller, there was no damage from that explosion during the accident, although there was a meltdown and the reactor had to be written off. Those reactors, however, are vulnerable to tsunamis, and they have spent fuel pools outside the reactor, to my knowledge. And the spent fuel pools in pressurized water reactors are more vulnerable in that respect. The National Academies actually did a study of terrorist attacks on spent fuel pools in 2006, and they advised the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to take as much of the old fuel, the part that had already cooled down after a few years, out of the spent fuel pool so that this spent fuel doesn't have to be stored in close proximity inside the pools, increasing the risk of consequences and fires. But the Nuclear Regulatory Commission simply blew off the National Academies and has not ordered this to happen. In my opinion, we should be having hardened storage of spent fuel outside the spent fuel pools as much as possible. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission also blew off the Brookhaven study, which was done for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They said, well, this is our low probability and we don't have to force the companies to spend money on this. And this is kind of a cozy idea between the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the companies, where the bottom line seems to be more important than public safety and being written off as a low probability event. Well, British Petroleum was a low probability event, and what we're looking at is a low probability event, and I think we should pay more attention to reactors like the ones we have in California, and we should also pay more attention to the Mark I reactors, which fortunately are not in tsunami type of zones.
Arjun, once the uranium cools off in the pools, it's moved into dry cast storage, which is on site usually. Do you know what the case is in Japan? Are there casks and is it secure?
In Japan, they have a reprocessing plant and they send quite a lot of their spent fuel to the United Kingdom and France for reprocessing. So they actually export their nuclear waste problem and they import back the plutonium. So they have quite a lot of surplus plutonium in storage. And that's why they're trying to begin using the plutonium as fuel mixed with uranium oxide, which was in Unit 3. But they have an enormous, I think they have 40 or 50 tons of plutonium in storage in Japan, France, and Britain. And so that's why we need some information from the Japanese government. Was the spent fuel from these reactors sent abroad for reprocessing? Was some of it reprocessed in Japan? They have a reprocessing plant at Tokai Mura, south of where all this took place. So we simply don't have the information on what the inventories are at the reactor site. I was not able to observe from the air pictures taken from satellites or from the air that there are a large number of spent fuel casks. Fortunately, because the spent fuel casks could have been severely damaged in the event of a tsunami.
So how bad is this situation?
Well, I think the consequences are already pretty grim because people have been exposed, workers have been severely exposed, two reactors have had explosions, and there have been partial meltdowns. So already pretty severe. But so far, the radiological consequences appear to be limited so far as we can tell, although they are less limited than what the Japanese authorities would have you believe, because radioactivity has been detected on U.S. ships 60 miles away. The extreme possibility of most severe accidents, of course, as I've said, could have very, very dire consequences, and we hope that it doesn't happen and they are able to maintain this mixture of seawater and boron that will keep everything kind of tamped down and radioactivity releases. There are going to be radioactivity releases for months, and there will be radiation doses to the public. One doesn't know when the public is going to be allowed to come back. There are hundreds of thousands of people involved in the environs, and of course, when there's venting, it isn't limited to a 20-kilometer radius. The doses will be smaller farther away. But over time, because the weather and winds go in all directions, there will be exposures perhaps to small amounts of radiation to very large numbers of people.
Okay. Unlikely, extremely unlikely, the worst-case scenario. But what is it?
Well, the worst-case scenario is a complete meltdown of the fuel in these reactors, potential breach of reactor vessels, which they say won't happen. But I have not investigated independently, the potential for the fuel to melt through the reactor vessel. But the worst-case accident would be that for the reactors and a breakdown of cooling the spent fuel pools and fires and spread of very large amounts of long-lived radioactivity. That would cause significant habitability problems around these reactors. And I do not know if they have been modeled or addressed, but I think the worst-case consequences are almost too grim to contemplate.
Arjun Makhijani is the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research in Tacoma, Maryland. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.